Welcome to Talk the Talk, where labor and management meet to move union construction forward. I'm Kirk Westwood. Our guest today is Dr. Barry Miller from the Virginia Tech Helmet Lab, which just released the first ever safety ratings for construction helmets, adapting its well-known STAR methodology from sports to real-world construction falls. These ratings were developed with industry partners, including the Association of Union Constructors, to help contractors and tradespeople choose head protection that actually reduces injury risk on site. Dr. Miller, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's been a while. So today we just want to kind of update people on the Virginia Tech study and talk a little bit about, we'll probably ask some of the same questions from our first episode of talking a little about the Virginia Tech Lab, but we really want to hear about all the things you guys have found on construction helmets over the last several months to years that you guys have been studying those. But before we get started, as we did last time, I'm curious, have you had any fun, interesting songs stuck in your head of late?
Well, we just hired a new football coach here at Virginia Tech, James Franklin from Penn State. So Enter Sandman's been running through my mind. Here we go. New era.
There's worse things to have stuck in your head than Enter Sandman.
That's right. It's fun. So good stuff.
Okay. So give us the headline. What did Virginia Tech just publish and what problem were you trying to solve for construction?
So the official ratings came out in September, I think September 22nd. And the biggest takeaway, I think, is that there's a big difference between type 1 helmets and type 2 helmets when it comes to concussion risk and skull fracture risk. And so if you're exposed to falls, from ladders or scaffolding, it'd be pretty wise to choose a type 2 helmet. For one, those helmets stay on your head because they have a chin strap. And then the type 2 helmets also have peripheral padding. And what the data tells us is if you switch to those, you can reduce your concussion risk by about 35%. Skull fracture risk by 66%. And if you go to one of the best performing type 2 helmets, those numbers go up to a reduction in risk by 47% for concussion and 75% for skull fractures. That's huge.
Is that just for clarity, is that compared to wearing nothing or compared to wearing a type 1?
Compared to a type 1. So
wow.
Exactly. That's a huge difference. So the type 1 helmets don't have any peripheral padding. And so thus and therefore, they don't attenuate a lot of energy from falls and maybe struck by objects. And so, yeah, moving to a type 2 helmet, again, one, it'll stay on your head because it has a chin strap, but then it has peripheral padding that really reduces the risk of concussion and skull fracture, which is good to know. And so if you're making decisions, if you're, the safety department for a company or whatnot, yeah, these are strong considerations based on your work, type of work you're doing.
So your press materials emphasize that your ratings are built on job site fall scenarios, not the vertical top impacts. What kind of impacts did you test and how does that reflect severe but survivable construction accidents?
Yeah, so we looked at the OSHA injury reports, over 600, any fall videos that we had, survey information. And so, these accident scenarios aren't easy to capture. There's not a lot of video. It's not like, you're watching a football game and everything's videotaped and you can really determine what happens. So we do the best we can. And the OSHA reports basically said that 50% of the falls are below 14 feet and 50% above 14 feet. And then the 85th percentile was about 25 feet. And so those are the falls we decided to model. And so I should point out that when you fall from 14 feet, that doesn't mean you're falling 14 feet directly onto your head because you have, basically fall mitigating strategies is what we call those. You're going to put your arm out, your elbow out, you're going to sacrifice your shoulder before you hit your head. So with the energy impacts we used, turn into about a 5.5 foot fall directly onto your head and maybe a 7 foot fall directly on your head. So those are still severe, but certainly survivable, especially if you have a high quality type 2 helmet on.
So just for and I hope other people are curious the same thing. So 14 feet, you're up on scaffolding. Is the 14 feet from your head to the ground or from your feet to the ground as you're measuring what a 14-foot fall would be?
I'm pretty sure it's from where your head is.
Okay.
So Right. Maybe, you're on a 6-foot ladder and your head's at, roughly 14 feet or so, or a little bit lower, depending on what rung you're
right on.
But yeah.
So a 14-foot fall for a 6-foot person, if it's from your head, you might, okay. That makes a lot more sense. Or good clarity.
Yeah, then if you looked at our test methodology, if you go to the webpage, you'd see that we drop a safety helmet with a head form from about 5.5 feet, and then the high energy is about 7 feet to give us the appropriate velocities that would be attained from falling from those heights. So that's how all that was determined.
And so you said with a head form, out of, and this is more just more personal curiosity for me, is this a full crash test dummy or is it truly just a head with a helmet on it that you're testing?
Yeah, we use just the head form, a Noxy head form, 50th percentile male human head. The helmet sits with the head form on a halo, and the halo actually drops and goes around a steel anvil to simulate our impact surface. And that impact surface is about 25 degrees with sandpaper, because, you know, surface friction makes a huge difference in how your head's going to respond. And most of the accidents we found are on concrete. We tested on other surfaces, but yeah, 80 grit sandpaper pretty much best simulates concrete. And so that's what we used. And then and people might ask, well, why an angled anvil? Well, you know, when you fall, you're not completely vertical. And so you fall and you're kind of moving away. You're trying to, you know, save your head from hitting first. And so you're probably going to hit at some sort of angle. And we determined 25 degrees is a pretty good representation of the falls we modeled.
Now, can you walk us through the average, the reductions in prediction concussion and skill fracture risk? Like when workers move from type 1 to type 2, what are the top performers achieved?
Okay, so if you went from a basic one-star type 1 helmet to a top-tier five-star helmet, concussion risk is reduced by 47%. And this is probably more important. Skull fracture risk is reduced by about 75%. And so, you know, you're going home to your family more than likely. Yeah. I should also point out that new prototypes are already in the lab. You know, this was the initial step. Hey, now that the companies have a design tool, because we share the test protocol, which represents real world accident scenarios. And so we're already getting prototypes in here. They're going to do better than the top, you know, number one rated helmet right now. And so a variety of material structures, you know, it's going to change. It's going to evolve, and which is great for the industry. We see this in all the other sport helmets that we cover. And so you'll see an evolution of helmet performance here really quick.
You guys have said that you recommend 4- and 5-star models for workers that are exposed to fall risks. How do you determine what the threshold is? Why? I mean, obviously 4 is better than 1, but what is the determining factor of the threshold?
Yeah. So when we look at all the helmets at the end, and we look at the star scores, and so they kind of, you know, when you look at these, we rank order them by star score. And so star score for construction helmets represents both concussion, the number of concussions we'd expect to see, and the number of skull fractures we'd expect to see from our test protocol. And so, you know, obviously a lower number is better, right? And so as those numbers come out and, you know, basically we look at them and say, oh, well, here's natural breaks. I think Steve also uses some sort of statistical model, like, all right, what's the 75%, et cetera, top 75%, 25%. And so those get broken down based on how the helmets perform. It's not predetermined. It's after we do all the testing and then we see how it shakes out.
We are not being promotional here at all. By the way, I'm not looking for a commercial, but what models really stood out? Were there any really top brands or styles? Obviously the Type 2 in general, but were there any top contenders?
Yeah, if you looked at the helmet ratings, you'll see we initially rated 17 helmets. We've already added some, and I guess we have more coming out here soon. But I think the Milwaukee Tool Bolt came out on top, actually two of them, but the Stetson, DeWalt, the Cass Zenith 2, pretty close. So those were all kind of bunched together, and those were all kind of 5-star. The Pip Traverse MIPS was up in there. So then there's kind of a break to the 4-tier. I think 50% are 4-star or better, I think was what Steve was shooting for. And then that was the statistical model he used to differentiate them. But the star score drives everything. So if you really want to know and make some comparisons, the star score is really what you look at. The 5, 4, 3, 2 number of stars is for convenience and quick assessment. And obviously we would hope that, you know, most helmets move to the 5-star category. And then, you know, at some point, maybe we'll have to rescale those to differentiate helmet performance. But this is where we are now currently.
So beyond the brands, were there any particularly design cues or safety that safety directors could look at for evaluating helmets, like which ones have liners or energy management tech, fit systems, or what were the design features that stood out?
That's a great question. Most of the helmets have expanded polystyrene foam, better known as EPS. But there's a, you know, wave cell, there's choroid, there's other materials out there that are going to be incorporated here pretty quickly. 3D printed lattice structures. So again, I think we're just at the beginning of this evolution. EPS, I found this out from a company director that used to work for Hydro Flask. You know, they make insulated cups for, you know, coffee and things. And he said, you know, the best thing to do for insulation is it's airtight, right? Vacuum packed. And then the next best thing is these air gel pellets. And he goes, the third best insulator is EPS, expanded foam. And so, you know, if you're wearing that in a helmet, no wonder it might get a little hot because it's a great insulator. So right. And that's the complaint we quote unquote hear out there, that the type 2 helmets are hot compared to type 1, you know, because they have padding. But there's other structures that might be better ventilation than EPS. And so, we'll see how it goes. But, you know, from our perspective, usually what we say is impact performance is generally determined by the density and thickness of the padding materials, whatever they are. So if it's the right density, you know, that's, you know, number one. And then is it thick enough, right? So you don't want the padding to bottom out during an impact.
Sure.
So, yeah, so that those are the keys. And, you know, it's easy for us to say because we just test and evaluate. The helmet companies are the ones that have to figure out, oh, what should we use? What's the density? What's the thickness? What's the geometry? Geometry might make a difference too of the structure because it might have the ability to deform in wider variety of directions and energy levels. That's for them to figure out. But yeah, so that's basically our assessment.
Want to get your company message in front of the top leaders in union construction? Place an ad on Talk the Talk. Our listeners are owners, contractors, and labor leaders who shape the future of our industry. It's a direct way to reach a powerful, engaged audience and show your support for union construction. Learn more about advertising opportunities at talk.org.
So after our first interview, back at the very beginning of this line of testing, so after that, I'm in the Army Reserve and I'm a public affairs officer. I had an opportunity to go up and tour the Natick Soldier Center in Massachusetts, and I got to walk through their helmet lab. I actually asked them about you guys. I was like, have you guys worked with Virginia Tech? And I was like, not directly, but we certainly know some people over there and vice versa. And I got to do, like you were talking about the 3D printed, just honeycomb kind of structures and lattice structures. I got to hold some and watch some of their testing, what they're doing with the ballistic style and military style helmets. And it gave me a lot of more direct respect for kind of what you guys are going through and doing, just watching them. Everything from bullets to falls to shrapnel from heat to, it is a very interesting process that you just don't think about all the science that goes into. You have to wear it, so it has to be comfortable.
Right. If you look at some of the top performing football helmets and go to their web pages, you'll see all kinds of advanced technology in the materials they use. I think, you know, something can be gleaned from that. That's the most advanced sport helmet on the market, American football. And so I think there's things you can glean from that and incorporate into safety helmets. They might get a little bit heavier, but I think, you know, over time it's probably okay if it's going to provide a lot more protection. So I kind of think it just depends on what kind of work are you doing? Do you need that? And so there might be different layers or different models based on the kind of work you do. And hopefully no one falls, right? And hopefully they're, you know, safer and you got fall protection and other things, but unfortunately, you know, accidents do happen. So never know when you're going to hit your head. So it's best to have the best protection.
So at least from our perspective, this particular study had a lot of industry participation and a lot of people reaching out like, please study this. You know, obviously we helped contribute as well. Who are the big people that really brought this to life and made this study possible?
Yeah, so the JRGF Foundation, American Society of Concrete Contractors, Electric International, and the Association of Union Contractors or Constructors. Well,
constructors, absolutely. Don't worry. It's a mistake made a lot.
I always get those mixed up. It's like contractors or constructors. Isn't it the same word, sort of?
It's a confusing distinction, yes. Well, on behalf of Talk, we are so proud to have been able to help fund the work. Earlier, you were talking about how you were watching lots of videos of, or as much as you could get in reading OSHA reports. How did that affect the testing you did? And how does the testing you did on these helmets compare to the testing of type ones that is, from my understanding, mostly protection against things falling on your head?
You know, really want to study how do people get injured in the real world? And so we wanted our test protocol to best represent those real world accident scenarios. So we weren't really necessarily thinking about type one or type two. Just like, what does the worker need to be protected from? And so those fall scenarios that we modeled 14 feet and 25 feet determined how we're going to test the helmets. And so we didn't really think about, you know, we don't take the standard into consideration. They have different reasons for the test they do, but this is what we did. And we focused on falls at this point in time. We'd love to add struck by object moving forward. We can always add that to the test protocol. So we've already got a proposal out there with the major orgs to see if they would want us to pursue that as well. You know, whether it's an I-beam, you know, something falling from above. And so those are different injury scenarios and we would like to include those. So this is kind of just the beginning, but trips and falls account for, you know, most of the injuries in the construction industry.
I know a lot of it's tradition or the style or the look, but there's been a lot of pushback in various pockets of the industry that are kind of waiting for waiting to make that transition from type 1 to type 2 helmets. What advice would the data show about making that switch? What outside of just the numbers of how much safer they are, what tips do you have for procurement, training, getting the best helmet, how to wear it correctly, what retention systems, things like that?
Well, comfort's going to be important, right? But moving to a type 2, if you're exposed to falls, is, I think, critical. I mean, the data says it all. These reductions are significant. But I think, all the manufacturers are, like I said, we got all kinds of prototypes in here. They're going to get better and better. I think as a procurement officer, using our ratings page as a guide might give you some insight into, what might we want to do. And I don't know about all the attachments, and some of these helmets have, those kinds of things that I'm not aware of. So it's a start. It's not the end all be all, but I think using our ratings to make an informed decision is pretty important.
And so now you've touched on this a few different times, but what's next? Is it more styles of helmet, more technology of helmet, or more brands, more impacts? What's in that proposal for the next thing?
So the star ratings are in perpetuity. So as new commercial models become available, we'll test rate and post them to the website. But as far as future developments, once we do the research on maybe struck by object, we'll incorporate that into the current star rating protocol. And so then either we back test the helmets that are already on there, or we completely start over and add that protocol along with what we've already done. And that's the beauty of our star ratings. We evolve. We're not so static like some of the standards that takes lots and lots of data before they move. If there's data that says, hey, we should include this or consider this, we can modify and move forward. So that's basically how the process works. But yeah, so we have lots of helmets to do. Obviously we couldn't do them all to launch the ratings, and we'll continue to buy 6-7 models, commercially available models that we're either in the process of getting tested or just waiting in the testing queue. So we're a busy lab.
Just kind of closing up, and this question's just for fun. Was there anything really surprising or fun or interesting, or what was the coolest, like, didn't see that coming moment, or was there any kind of standout anecdotes you have to share for this project?
I think one of the biggest surprises we had was how variable these helmets are for a given test. Moving the helmet just the slightest different way, just outside, a dot that big to that. Big differences based on the locations, the plastic shells, the relatively small amount of padding compared to like bike helmets and equestrian helmets and snow sport helmets. So we had to be extremely precise and figure out how we're going to standardize. All helmets fit a little bit different, Model A to Model B, and the way you wear it. So we had to really standardize, on our head form with using lasers to try to lock in and be as precise as possible. But the helmets in general are pretty variable. And again, I think it's just because they don't have tons of padding and the plastic shells are kind of thin, and the suspension system, the way they operate, they decouple really easily. So now you put on a football helmet, and football helmets still decouple from your head, but they're pretty tight. And so you might get a little movement, whereas a construction helmet or a type 1 or type 2, they move pretty easily. So they decouple pretty easily when you hit your head. And so that plays into how does the head respond. You'd prefer the helmet move independently before it takes your head with it, as it absorbs energy too. So yeah, so we saw a lot of variability that we had to really lock in and kind of redo our whole test setup. And so lots of testing. They interviewed us when the orgs were out here 2 weeks ago, and they said, Barry, so how do you know what you did was right? And I was trying to think of a sophisticated answer. But the answer is this: we test, we look at the results, we strategically test based on those, and we analyze that data. And this process was iterative, and we probably, this 15, 20 iterations to get it right. And so we keep doing it until we're pretty confident that our protocol is, for one, representative, and maybe two, just as important, is it repeatable? So can we repeat this and be consistent? If we test helmet A over and over, do we get similar results, right? We don't want it to be variable when we put it on through our test protocol. So that's the answer. Yeah, we test and retest.
That's a fantastic answer. Again, now we've gotten through all the science. Now I just have all of the kind of fun jackass questions. Do you have any idea how many helmets you went through? How many helmets were destroyed in the making of this process?
I would say upwards of 700.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. So when we do the test protocol, we ask for 15 samples for one model, just because, you know, for other sports, we can test the helmet in multiple locations without, you know, getting results from the previous test interfering with the new one.
Right.
But these helmets, we didn't find that. So we have to one fresh helmet every single impact. And there's 12 test conditions, right? So yeah, it's a lot of helmets, which is unfortunate, you know, for the carbon footprint, but that's what it takes to make sure that we're getting accurate results. So yeah, that for example, for bike helmets, we just have to move about 10 centimeters away from the previous impact location. So it doesn't have any, you know, effects on the next test. So
sure.
You know, that padding is quite a bit thicker. So that's part of it.
Right.
But yeah, it takes a lot of helmets we went burned through with lots of hours. I mean, this Dr. Mark Magoni, our director of testing, well, he was pulling his hair out. So we had to test, retest, and like, oh my, why are we getting so much variability? We started using the laser system to position the helmets on the head form. You know, we did impact surfaces, different ones, different angles, different velocities, different helmet models, all to try to standardize all these things. So it was a lot of work. It was a big lift.
And now getting serious again real quick, as you've said variability a few times, you've answered this a little bit. I just want to clarify. The variability you guys found in the tests, would those be replicative of people wearing the helmets differently or people falling differently? Is that variability something that people need to worry about, of like, make sure you're wearing the helmet correctly or et cetera?
That's a great question. And, you know, one kind of I pose, but, you know, to get the repeatability, we had to really standardize how we're going to fit the helmet on our head form. As I mentioned, you know, slight differences in where that helmet's hit makes a difference, but, you know, we can't test every possible scenario, but, you know, it may perform differently depending on if you have it tilted up, tilted down, a little rotated, and it's almost impossible to account for all those variations. And so it might matter, but yeah, it just depends on the model, how you have it, how you're wearing it, the suspension system. I mean, there's numerous factors that go in that. They're almost you can't really explain them all. Yeah.
Well, we actually have a guest coming on in a few weeks, Ike Pritchett. Do you know the name Ike Pritchett?
No.
Okay, well, Ike Pritchett, he is a superintendent out of Kansas City, and he has a talk he gives on how a new type 2 saved his life. And he'll be a guest at our State of the Union conference here in December. And he's also coming on the podcast, where he made the switch over to the type 2 reluctantly, as often do. And he didn't even fall. It was an impact. And he shows the MRIs and shows the different things that happened to him. And there's no way he should be alive. But the helmet really did come through for him. So I know what you guys are doing is great work, and I think the helmets are the future. I'm really excited to talk to you again in a year or two when the next line of testing is done.
Yeah, just keep checking the website. Make sure you refresh your browser, because we'll keep adding helmet models as we proceed, as Mark gets them tested. So the queue's kind of long right now, but we'll keep working at it. So thanks for having us. And yeah, we look forward
absolutely
to serving the industry.
Thank you so much. And are you guys joining us for, you guys are coming to speak at our STUC conference as well. I believe you have someone coming out. Is that you?
That December 8th or 9th?
December 10th.
I think that's Steve, Dr. Rosen's going to be there for that one. I'm going to Austin for the major safety summit. I don't know if that's you guys or MCAA or a combination of everybody.
That one's the combination of everyone. And that one's in January. And we're looking forward to seeing you there. But yeah, ours is in December on December 10th. Either way, whether you can come to our STUC event, to the listeners, whether our STUC event or to the Major Safety Summit in January in Austin, I'd love to hear more about all of this. Thank you so much for joining us.
You guys are welcome. Thanks for having us.
Dr. Miller, thank you just so much for joining us and walking us through these numbers in the real world. For our listeners, we'll link the Virginia Tech press release as well as our last episode with Dr. Barry Miller when we first introduced this study from last year. We'll link to the ratings page and a few trade press summaries in the show notes. If you're considering an upgrade, look for 4 or 5-star Type 2 helmets in these ratings and build your plan from there. And thank you for listening to Talk the Talk.